WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. Yes, I'm wearing my Rush sweatshirt because it's winter. Yes, I'm wearing it over my State Fair logo. And all these wise conversations brought to your friends at Wise Markets. We're rounding up this month as we get into the holidays, and I'm talking about friendships and 30th anniversary and all of these years of doing sports radio and going to rock concerts and hosting loud jazz bands in my basement at WNST. Alan McCallum has been our friend since way before we had to wear masks when we went out. I have not been in a room with Alan, I don't think, since the plague. He was managing Kennedy Centers, and I was doing sports radio, and here we are 2 years later. And dude, it's been 30 years of radio, and I started to scratch my head and think about, who am I having on this week? Well, I got to call Kenny Albert. Got to have some of my producers on, Andy Mueller, Ray Bachman, longtime friends and voices. And then I think, like, where did you come in as to where other people came in? And then I'm thinking, man, you saw my wife come into my life, almost every employee, because you were there before the station was ever even conceptualized. Like, literally, when I called you and said, hey, Alan, I think we got a radio station in 1998. We're going to do a whole radio station in August.
That's not what you said. You called me and said, meet me at Hart Road. You gave me the address.
Oh, I don't remember this. All right, so let me get a drink here. And we're going to be over Costas Storytelling on the 15th as part of the Maryland Crab Cake Tour presented by the Maryland Lottery. Alan has been my baseball reporter since back when I cared about baseball, and so did you. 95? What was the year? 95, is that right?
I started with you. Sue Monday introduced me to you in the summer of 95. I did my first two or three right before Cal broke the record. And then in 96, you brought me on full-time, and I went, well, I guess, 5 years straight doing broadcast from the ballpark with you. So 95 was the first time I sat in a room with you at the radio station before WNST.
George Hipp and the Legends 1360 Orchestra.
That is correct. And when you bought the station, I remember distinctly, because probably 6 months before you called me, I asked you, you know, sports stations are becoming a real thing. Like, would you consider doing it? And you said vehemently, no, I'm not going to do it, and here's why. Wouldn't work, blah, blah, blah. You went through all the stuff. So I was like, okay.
Man, you got memory. Man, you're remembering stuff. This is why I want to bring you guys on. Because, like, you're remembering stuff I did that I don't remember doing or saying. And there's stories written about me back in the time. You know, I see the quotes. And I get back into that mindset of what I believed then, what I stood for.
Well, to this day, I don't know whether you were just shining me on to sort of keep the, you know, rumors away.
No, I never really thought it would work. Because I didn't think the sponsors would make it work. I changed my mind when I did the math. So I got a station. When I got the station in 98, my rent was essentially what those creeps over at Hody's were charging me for 3 hours. So, I mean, there's all sorts of backstory about the Mangionis and the Hody's and the radio station and Legends 1360 at WCBM and buying stations and licenses and the FCC and tower space and all that.
Sure.
The story for me is a guy named Dwight Weller was our engineer at WLG.
I remember him well.
You remember Dwight?
And quite the gentleman.
Yeah, Dwight got cancer and died. And the last time I saw Dwight alive was in the airport at Dulles. I flew back to Dulles from the Ravens Memphis game. The Ravens only played one game in Memphis. They only played one season in Memphis. The Titans or the Oilers moved there. So it's 98. So Dwight passed. And at that time, Jim Richardson, who's been my engineer for 23 years, became the engineer of the radio station and found this little station in Towson, WTOW, that had been operating. And it was out of business. It was just running. It had a computer, which I didn't even have at the time. It had one of them newfangled computers running music. and all I remember is they had, it was a kids radio station, but they were really into, dude, what was the ska band? Not the New Radicals. It was of that era, but the ska band, they had a couple of hits. God, I mixed them up with I'll start singing the song. I'll come up with it. But either way, okay. this band played – every other song was this band, and it was –
Mighty Boston?
That's it, Mighty Mighty Boston. Thank you. That's the impression that I get. There you go. That's the impression that I get. Right. A lot of horns, a lot of ska. Yeah. Right. So it's literally the Mighty Mighty Boston. So their music was in this mix, and it was like a kid's mix, and it was Capital Kids Radio, and it was some people in Bethesda that had bought some radio stations. They were going to do Disney radio for kids. Nickelodeon was on. My kid was a kid then. It was 1995. 98. He was 13, 14. So
wow.
When I found the radio station, the guy was going out of business, and he gave me a price, and the price was pretty much the same price I was paying for the 3 hours, because he thought you could either give that to Michael Hodes and David Pessin and whoever the hell else was over there before they got involved in suing me, which really I didn't like. Maliciously and awfully, and they got their ass kicked, by the way. But nonetheless, I had the station, and I thought to myself, like, what am I going to do with a radio station? You know what I mean? Like, other than put myself on the 3 hours that I do, what else do we do? And like, I didn't want to get into satellite radio and Jim Rome. And you know, at that time, I guess I dreamed of being on a satellite station, but there was no real satellite radio other than one-on-one sports.
Right.
So now, you know, I have that relationship there. And after I think I have a one-on-one sports shirt that is in the bottom of a pile. All the guys are challenging each other because we all have a Facebook page. Everybody that worked at one-on-one sports and Sporting News Radio. But before that, I was thinking, what am I going to do? And you were involved, Mark Messina, some other people were involved around to like fill time. But then it's like you need sponsors to feed families and to feed people if they're going to do the work. And then it really was about whether agencies would buy what we were selling. And they never did, still never do. It's 22 years later, other than a handful of accounts and local people that I do business with, my friends at Wise Markets and Royal Farms, the Maryland Lottery. I mean, everybody knows who our sponsors are. Planet Fitness, longtime sponsors, Toyota and Jay Pivick, just great. Coons Ford. I mean, just great people that have kept us going all these years. But in the beginning, it was BAL had ratings. And I know you remember this, bro, like how much of a prick I was and how challenged I was at 28 years of age to wake up and see myself disparaged in the newspaper by the guy at WBAL, Jeff Beauchamp and Ed Kiernan, who hated me. I mean, they hated me, and they got it printed in the paper that I would fail and that it would never work. And here's all the reasons why it wouldn't work. Well, you were one of my best friends at that time. I mean, that really pissed me off, right? Like
I remember it
every
well.
Single day of my life, I set out to put WBAL out of business. And you know, I laugh about it now with Dan Juris, who I ran into and flew home with from Chicago. And you know, the group that runs BAL, very nice people, friends of mine. I texted with them. But this is a different era back in the 90s when I tried to do this and people told me it couldn't be done.
Well, you called me one afternoon, maybe a morning. It's like 10:30, 11 o'clock. And you're like, what are you doing? And I'm like, currently nothing. And you said, here's the address, Hart Road. Come out and meet me. Like,
did
why?
Did you Google it?
No, I didn't know what Google was. I had no idea. It might not have existed at that point. And so I found my way out to Hart Road. And The turn is always interesting. If you look, I think you told me, you know, there's a quick turn. If you blink, you'll miss it.
Did you ever see the white deer, the albino deer?
I do remember seeing that. Yes. I saw a lot more chipmunks, but yes,
I saw the albino deer, by the way. Everybody told me about it, but go ahead.
And you drive up, there's a little gravel driveway and it's just this little house out in the backwoods.
Little house on the prairie.
Yeah. And I came through the door and you were like, "Welcome to WNST, first home of Baltimore sports." And I was at that point, I saw the tower driving up. So I knew there was something.
I literally, you came out there on a blind date. Literally, I didn't tell you what was going on.
Well, I knew
that
you're
sounds
ugly
like
face.
Maybe the way I did things 30 years ago to say, "Hey, I'm getting a radio station. Come on out, Alan." I probably didn't couch it that way. And probably much like now, because I'm a very private public person, as you well know, right? Like I just am. I value every bit of my privacy that I have left, which is like less than an ounce at this point as a public pinata over these 30 years, as I celebrate my 30 years of pinata-ness. I probably didn't want the world to know about it. You know, I was still in the process of making a deal and figuring out all the stupid money I spent on things to entertain employees that didn't work out so well, like pinball machines and raving games and bubble hockey and things that I thought would make the station a great place to be, instead acted as an incredible distraction toward my demise. But nonetheless, the things that I thought at that time and moved in, I probably was coy about it, I guess. Yeah, that probably sounds right. I probably still would be.
it was wild and exciting, and you walked me through your plans. You talked about building the big table in the broadcast room and the automation that would help make it work. And at that point, it was going to be satellite radio and the like. You talked me into trying to sell advertising time. And after about 6 months, I found out definitively that I was not a good salesman.
You and every other person I've ever met, not named Hennessy, probably.
But, It was an exciting time. I remember it well.
Alan McCallum is here. We're celebrating 30 years on December the 13th. It's 30 years, 1991. Man, I go back to that, right? So Camden Yards, we had never set foot in, okay? So Camden Yards is getting built. I was working at the Sun, and I came in on the Sunday night after Thanksgiving in 1991, and there was a sign up on the union board that said you could take a buyout. I didn't even know what the term meant. I worked there 6 years and they were going to give me like 18 months of pay to leave. And I was 23 years old. So I was doing the games with Kenny Albert. I was the beat writer for the Skipjacks at the paper. George Taylor was very up in age, and Jimmy Jackson was over at the Morning Sun at the time. Great, great humans. Good people. Good hockey people. Every time I eat Fiddle Faddle, I think of both of them. They always had Fiddle Faddle. And they ate it too. And they shared it. it was a Barry Trotz era. You know, I'm going to try to grab Trotz on one of these off nights. They had a COVID outbreak a couple weeks ago. We were about to get dinner up in Philadelphia last week and that didn't happen. But so I put my head back to where that was. And I came in and I thought, what am I going to do with my life? And Kenny said, "Nestor, I'm doing a sports radio show. It's going to be New York style." And I came into the studio on a cold winter night. You were never in that studio, right? Like when you came into my life, I was broadcasting from the Sheraton maybe, or no, from the Lord Baltimore.
You were in Towson at LG.
We were at the Sheraton. Okay. So before that, there are some people who remember Buster Olney being one of them, by the way, who was in my studio in Dave Johnson would remember it. Mike Messina would remember it. People that came into that original studio in 1991 and 92, because we weren't there like a long time, and we certainly weren't there for a good time. Vito Stellino came into that studio. I think Tom Kapp, David Muir, I'm convinced Moeller came to that studio. I'm pretty sure Moeller came down to that studio and did a Friday Football Frenzy. Alan, the room was 6 feet by 8 feet, the whole room, and it had four seats and an ashtray in the middle, and it had the mics off the wall, the boom. I mean, it was a literal red light outside that went on when it was live, and we had a glass and fantastic Freddie Robinson, Rockin' Robin, 1950s. Disc jockey, was still around in the 90s, spinning tunes. Wayne Gruen, the great Ken Jackson, the voice of WNSG. Parental guidance is suggested. All these guys were a part of my life as a kid, teaching me how to do radio and stop sets and giving legal IDs. You're listening to WNST, WNST, to House in Baltimore. So I learned all this stuff. But in 91, I left the Sun. I don't even know what the hell I was doing. I was DJing out at the Emerald Tavern. I had Marcella on from Coco's. She was out there. There were bookies and gamblers and football fans like myself, the Oilers fan in me in 91, 92, 93. But I came in. I never thought of doing sports radio in my life. I didn't listen to sports radio. Phil Jackman would listen to it on the way down to Capitals games, and I'm like, why are you listening to that? I listened to Phil Wood, and 30 years later, I can definitively say he never liked me. And yeah, I can think of a lot of things to say. He was quoted in the Baltimore Sun as saying, if a tree fell in the woods, would anyone hear it? And that was a reference to my career, that no one would ever listen to me and that we would be a tree falling in the woods. WNST would be a tree falling in the woods. So, but I loved him. I loved Phil Wood. I listened to Phil Wood. 1984, 5, 6, 7, 8. He was on after the Skipjacks games. So sure. Even though he never liked hockey and he was a bleeding heart Washington Senators fan or whatever, but I never listened to sports radio. And it just never was my thing. Even though I was a sports addicted human being, it was never my thing to call and argue with Stan the Fan. You know, like, just wasn't my thing. So doing it, I guess I did it a different way. I wanted to do it the way the Grease Man did radio. I guess Howard Stern later on, but I was never – my ensemble thing of talking to my producers and stuff, nobody did that other than Howard Stern in 1995 when I would yell, hey, Alan, what's going on over there? And you'd open the mic and be like, hey, Nestor, John's on line two. Take him on line two. You know, that was what producers did back then. And I think I turned the ensemble thing – if I did anything, I gave a lot of people careers. You can just go to the FM dial that you listen to, 105.7, all of that.
There's no question about that.
But more than that, I think giving people an opportunity and giving them a step up, if there's anything about NST in my career over the course of time, that if I die tomorrow morning in a car crash, there are a lot of people who – owe their career to the fact this little place existed in Towson and that there were a handful of sponsors. And you can go back to all the Budweisers and Millers and Coors and the road trips and people funding that kept families alive and diapers on raised kids and like on and on and on and on that I'm very appreciative of from back then. But it was designed to fail. And we've been failing for 23 years now. I'm 30 years of failing. So it's been crazy.
There's no question. You invigorated an aspect of Baltimore sports that had been looking for a voice and an audience to come together. And absolutely, the careers that came out of WNST speak for themselves. From
radio
to TV. I got
something for
you.
How about this? I was in Philadelphia last week, and I hurt my hip. I was going to see Genesis and driving, and bad things happened. I didn't get to Pittsburgh. I still screwed my back up. I heard Joe Giglio. And I don't ever listen to sports radio. Like, I literally this week, I listened to BAL for 5 minutes on Tuesday morning. And I listened to The Fan for 5 minutes on Tuesday morning. But last week I was in Philly and I listened to sports radio for 10 minutes. And a guy that I gave his first job to is doing afternoon drive, Friday afternoon, Philadelphia Gardner Minshew Radio, Joe Giglio, who sent me a company. Like, literally, I just got in the car. I wanted classic rock. I put 94.1 on in Philly, and you're listening to Odyssey, Radio Odyssey. And then they, you know, play some Rolling Stones. Hey, it's Joe Giglio here. I'm like, well, there's another guy, you know, there you one more. So, I mean, it happened to me 4 days ago.
You started a lot of careers. And look, for me, from my perspective, so much happened with you in the last almost 25 years. Yeah. 25 years.
26 and a half. To make you laugh.
I learned to be professional on a baseball field. I learned to, how to do interviews. I learned how to produce radio shows. I learned how to host radio shows. I learned how to do some commercials on radio. And I met some really good friends out of that, that I'm friends with to this day. I started a band and was able to practice there for over a decade. recorded some albums out there.
I didn't know that.
Met some famous people and had Kurt Schilling call in when you weren't even in to say you wanted to talk to me and the other co-host during the All-Star break.
I have a lot of hours of you hosting radio and talking to famous people, by the way. I have cassette tapes of all of it.
I made myself sound like a jackass at times. And
how many of the World Series and All-Star Games shows did you host that when I was on the field handing the phone to Tom Glavin that you were on the – probably a lot of it.
A lot of them.
A lot of the baseball, the World Series stuff.
Yep.
Were you on the other end of the line when Tony Bennett came on? Or Donna Summer?
I don't think so. But I did a lot of baseball people for sure.
Alan McCallum's here. What do you make of the lockout and whatever? I mean, enough of me geezing and wheezing and 30, but it's my 30th anniversary. I want to storytell a little bit.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I mean, it's all cool, but I mean, at the end of the day, we're baseball people. And I had Mike Bordick out last week and, you know, I could say a lot of things. And I said a lot of things to Mike off air that quite frankly, didn't need to be said on air in regard to Masson and in regard to how he was treated and how I was treated when he was working there. And he was the one person in all the stuff that I pulled with the Orioles. By the way, I found some Free the Bird shirts. If you need a fresh one, I have a couple. Like I have like 50 of them left in a box. I found them. If you want the originals, you know, the 06s.
I still have one or two. They're probably pretty faded at this point. And I know I have one of the little banners here as well in a box somewhere.
You know, in the aftermath of that, I've had three, Mike Flanagan, one, most importantly, Mike Flanagan, but two other players over the course of time come to me and tell me I was doing the right thing. One of them was Doug DeCinces, who I ran into, strangely enough, at a Republican event for Ehrlich back before I told him exactly how I feel about him, which was recently, but back when I errantly and disgracefully supported him. Doug DeCinces came up to me one night, who also had his legal problems with insider trading and some issues, you can Google that, with some local people as well. And I don't know Doug DeCinces from boo. I mean, I don't really never interviewed him. Doug DeCinces was at my Little League trophy ceremony in 1978. Eastwood. So
wow.
I have a picture with Doug DeCinces in 19, wearing a brown bomber jacket, very disco look. It was 1978, right? He's Doug DeCinces. He came to the Teamsters Union Hall on Dundalk Avenue, right by Drew Street, and came to our Little League. But I don't know Doug DeCinces at all. He came up to me. I was like, "You're the Free the Birds guy, Aparicio, right?" Yeah. He's like, "Keep it up. You're doing the right thing." And you don't forget that when Doug DeCinces comes up and says that to you. This was in 08, whenever Ehrlich ran the second time, it was 08, like that, in that range, 07, 08, after I'd done Free the Birds. The only other person that ever said anything kind to me, I ran into Mike Bordick at the Oriole Hall of Fame luncheon. Are you familiar with my Oriole Hall of Fame luncheon stories? Did you know about my Aunt Pat Gates and going every year and how every year I would get treated like garbage in her presence? Do you know about this?
I don't think I know this.
Okay, so Pat Gates.
I know the name.
Love Pat Gates. Pat's deceased. She left us a few years ago, right around the time my mom died. She was a little younger than my mom. I bet Pat was born in the 20s. You know, Pat made it into her 90s. I mean, Pat was a glorious old lady driving in her 80s, you know. And she loved the Orioles. And she was an Oriole Advocate original, 1957. So
wow.
She had been in the Advocates from the very beginning of time. So she knew every Harry Dalton ever, you know, like the whole, and she loved the Orioles, just like lived for the Orioles. And she loved my show and she would call in all the time. And then she would always want to come over and promote the Advocates. So she'd drive over to the radio station, sit in my studio, and like everyone, people are like, "Hey, Ness, you're doing this Baltimore Positive community thing." I'm like, I used to let any jackass in the world come on and have a microphone, right? Seriously. So when Aunt Pat says, "I want to come in and talk about the Oriole Advocates," and we're trying to drum support so Alan would join the Advocates, so some people of color might be there, some younger people under the age of, you know, born in 1940 would want to be involved with the Orioles. And this is when the stench of the arrogance, right, the Angelos arrogance that you and I are very familiar with, sort of took over. So when I got thrown out in 06, they started doing this Hall of Fame luncheon. They didn't do that back in the 90s. They just didn't. They did it as a revenue starter to bring sponsors, to sell out the fifth floor in the warehouse, the restaurant that never was, because they made everything too exclusive to exclude everybody. They become so exclusive, no one wants to go there anymore, like Yogi would say, you know. I went, and for year after year after year, I watched every PR person, manager, team manager, I could name every Matt Dreyer, every employee treat me like trash while I'm there. Aunt Pat had a table. She would always invite me. I was always her date. We would always go with the cruise lady. Shout out Highland Town. And every year the cast would change, and it was Fred Mann for hosting or Jim Hunter, or they're putting Mike Bordick in or whatever. One of the years, Mike Bordick was on television. This is probably 10 years ago. He came up to me and he's like, dude, what they're doing to you is really wrong. I just want you to know that. I just want you to know that I know how wrong it is, and what they're doing to you is wrong. It's not right. And I'm like, appreciate that, Bordy. And I never saw Mike Bordick again for 10 years. Except on my television, because I don't go to the games. I haven't run into him in a coffee shop. I just haven't run into him.
Sure.
But, like, I loved Mike Bordick from the minute he got here. He came here in such tough circumstances. And all these years later, to sit down and run into him and, like, do an hour, which you can go watch. The warmth that he is and the people are, and how every single word he said to me when the lights went off were the exact same words that Mike Flanagan said to me at Michael's in Timonium, the night that Flanagan called me and said, I'm taking the job. I'm going to be running the Orioles in 2002. It's before I knew my wife. So, like, it's crazy that 20 years later, Flanagan's dead. Team's still in last place. They're not playing baseball. We're on strike. And I got to get together with Mike Bordick and talk about how good things are with baseball. It's like, and he tried for, and I said to Bordy, how long were you there? 5-6 years? He's like, dude, I did 11 years. And I'm like, ugh. He's like, well, we had the Buck years. Some of them were good.
Yeah.
But baseball, I keep relationships with you, with Mark Messina, with people. Baseball's been like the sand through my fingertips as an aparicio. The whole reason I exist is because a family from Venezuela came here. It's a reason I'm in America, and I have such appreciation for that. But baseball, dude, I'm my 30th anniversary, and my dad's been gone almost 30 years now. He'd come back, he wouldn't recognize anything about baseball, and certainly wouldn't recognize my heart for it in regard to the fact that you and I don't text each other much about the Orioles anymore, do we?
Well, I mean, there's not a lot of story to tell right now until they bring up some of the guys. But, you know, baseball, there's no question, it's changed, and they're locked out right now, and I assume that's going to go on for a while, and talks will probably start heating up again around, I don't know, a couple weeks before spring training to get things done. But it's analytics, sabermetrics, Moneyball, the universe for the sport has changed. It's ironic that they're financially as viable as they've ever been in a time in America where they're probably the third sport, and people discount it at times. But
dude, when I have Dan Shaughnessy and Bob Ryan come on my show and tell me they're the third sport in Boston,
that's crazy. I mean, that's absolutely crazy. But look, I mean, the thing about baseball that's different from all the other sports is that it's every day for 6 to 7 months. And when you have all sports radio stations and all sports TV networks and, internet companies and online newspapers where you have to talk about something, baseball fills a space that nothing else really can. So it's never going to go away. It's always going to have its existence. The question is simply, what will it be? It's become a very methodical game of three true outcomes that I still love baseball, but it's certainly not is from my perspective as exciting as it was. The game was played differently. Players mattered differently. And now they're, you know, they've, I remember distinctly you reading the Lords of the Realm and telling me I needed to read it and picking it up and I knew the history of labor negotiations in baseball, but not in as intimate a way as that book really unravels it. And so to say that this is new is absurd, but the dollar levels, I remember distinctly reading in The Sun about an article where the question was, who will be baseball's first $10 million player? And they predicted it would be Ken Griffey Jr. And that was probably about the time that we started working together. And you jump 25 years later, and the money is so astronomical right now. You ask the question, what are they fighting over? And I mean, the reality is that it still most players, I think the average lifespan for a major league player is 4 years. So in theory, they're fighting for those guys who are going to walk out of the game, not millionaires, but the arguments they're making are for the millionaires. So it's a complicated tale that's being told right now.
Well, screwing the young players on service time is just gaslighting, right? Like Adley Rutschman's not good enough to be in the big leagues. It's just, they don't want to pay him and they don't want to start his clock and all of that. And hey, when he hits, we'll go sign the Max Scherzer. We'll go spend $100 million on the pit. No, you won't. And the Orioles are really, as I read national pieces and stuff in and around the strike, the Orioles are the poster child for this. And as mismanaged as all of this is with the Orioles and stuff, the real bleeding heart in me is really worried about the franchise and where the money's going to come from to support the franchise and the fact that there's a two-year lease and it's dangling and that there's no ask, right? There's nothing in front of the state of Maryland that says, here's the idea we have for the parking lot that you're going to give us, right? Because we're going to keep the team here, right? And there's not even like a leverage point to say what the next thing is, because that's the baseball thing. The next thing is Wrigleyville. The next thing is we're going to gamble. The next thing is we're going to own the casino. The next thing is we're going to own the land that we put the casino on, that we put the housing and mixed use on, that we put the bar on. And that's the Atlanta thing, right? So the next thing that happens in Nashville or the next place or what Oakland's trying to do or whatever they'll extort out of the Quebec government up in Canada, whatever Tampa's going to be, all of this is sort of predicated on the fact that people are going to care, that the money's going to come, that – and I even talked to Bordick about this a little bit the other day. Like, okay, so Ripken and Kevin Plank and you're – and, you know, we resurrect Tom Clancy from the dead and we just put this consortium together of awesome Baltimore people and they're going to buy the team. Where's the money coming from that's going to fill the stadium? Where's the money coming from that's going to fill the businesses? That money has to come from those other things that we're now seeing, which are – structures in and around the stadium that that take years of planning and billions of dollars, literally in some cases, that hold these things together.
You saw that in Texas with the ballpark in Arlington and Alex Rodriguez. And how,
God,
I
forgot that they built that new thing. And God forbid that I ever go back to Dallas. That's a place I never need to see. Believe me.
Look, Ness, what you're saying about the Orioles is not wrong. But there's some other realities. I mean, people are wringing their hands about the situation they're in. But here's the reality. When they built Camden Yards, they were the only game in the region. And they owned markets where the money was. And then the owners, trying to solve a problem, brought the Expos to Washington, cut off the Orioles from that connection with money. The schedule was unbalanced. So they're suddenly competing an astronomical amount of times during the season against Boston and New York and teams that have the most financial wherewithal in the sport. And they gave them a television network, and now they've spent the last decade trying to take it away, the compensation for bringing a new team into the region that cut them off from the money that they were surviving with, they were thriving with. So what if you're the Orioles and you're trying to be viable, are you supposed to do? We went through 13 years of them signing midline free agents that were never going to get them anywhere and playing the middle of the road, which put them at last place or next. And you get those little spurts where you're bad enough that you get some good players and you get a little run. We saw that with Showalter. They could certainly do that again. But if you're trying to build something sustainable, whether you're trying to be the Houston Astros or the Tampa Bay Rays, in the Tampa, I mean, Tampa, they've hit on something that is amazing, but does it really benefit the fans to have players just run through the system, grind them out, and bring in new guys?
Certainly hasn't gotten them a fan base, has it?
I'm not sure that's it's. You can win that way, but I'm not sure that's the way that would work in Baltimore. So if you're trying to build something that's sustainable, given the circumstances that now exist, I don't know how you can't go through what the Orioles are going through. I don't disagree with the situation. I don't disagree with what Michael Elias is trying to do. But to say that during this 5 years of absolute abomination, that you can stay with it and be invested all that time, it's a very tough sell. It's a tough sell to anybody that's a casual fan. It's a tough sell for people that want to see the club win. Is it necessary given the circumstances? Probably. But the process is painful. And when it comes out of it, you've got to find ways to bring people back. You know, the diehards will always show back up, whether they're muttering under their breath or not. But in an age when you can sit at home during a pandemic and have 60 to 80 inch monster screen TVs and have access to literally anything you can think up on the internet or TV, getting people to come back into the universe is going to be hard when the time comes.
Alan McCallum is here. He has been my ballpark reporter for 26 of the 30 years on radio. And I really did until I had you on here and I started looking at your face. I'm like, man, you were here before almost anything other than my kid was around. So
I got a beard. I got gray hair. I got gray hair in my eyebrows. We've lived a lot of life together, Ness.
Yeah, dude. Sure. And like, if I really went through the pictures, like the actual pictures of just you and me in various places, I mean, I probably could find 30 or 40 really dirty ones from, you know, the 90s on infields and in Cleveland and in airports. Yeah. And why did we not have a camera that day in New York when we were sitting together at Jeffrey Mayer?
First of all, be careful how you use the word dirty. People might take that wrong. But yeah, I was about to say we were
somewhere. I have a picture of you and Sherman Obando sitting in the dugout or something. I'm sure. I know, but we didn't have cameras so much then, though, did we?
No, really? I mean, you say that like you had, you know, you would have whipped out your phone and just taken video. But yeah, we were sitting down the right field line in Yankee Stadium watching the Jeffrey Mayer play. That certainly turned the tide for the Orioles, and launched an era of unparalleled winning for the Yankees. At least in this that half of the 20th and moving into the 21st century, if the Orioles win that game, I am fairly confident that they
Peter Angelos would have still screwed it up.
They would have gone to the World Series, and I'd be curious to see how the Yankee dynasty that became the Derek Jeter dynasty would have turned out. But that game changed a lot of fates for a lot of people. It really did.
Well, I think the Messina game 6-2, the Armando Benitez game was also you know, part of it. Oh man, where's Tony Tarasco when you need him? Alan McCallum is here, and after 30 years of me doing this and him doing that, it is always good to see you, visit with you, Zoom with you, have breakfast with you, anything but go to a ball game together. You know, at some point, Sting's touring next year. Maybe we'll go to a Sting concert together. That'd be fun, you and me.
I'd love that. Hey, you need to know this. You have impacted my life in positive ways, and given me opportunities that I couldn't have imagined before meeting you. And a lot of the history, a lot of the experiences that I've had, I feel very fortunate to have witnessed and experienced things that changed my life and gave me amazing stories, met amazing friends, and saw the other side of something that I dearly loved, and you have everything to do with that. And I'm grateful for the minute that I met you and all of the chances that we had to do something really cool together. It's something
I'm really grateful that I wrecked baseball for you, you know, as a fan,
stop.
Right?
Stop it. That's, you know, here's the reality. When you're 18 and 19 and you love something, no matter what happens, when you're 40 or 49, in my case, with 50 quickly approaching, you know, the world looks different. Your priorities change. You know, whether it's analytics or not, I'm sure baseball would feel different for me because I'm older. My perspective is different. Cynicism is a hard thing to ward off, but
at any age, Manny Machado not running out of ground ball would be unacceptable to me or my father or anyone else.
No question about that. But I still challenge myself on a regular basis to still look for magic in the world, and there's still magic that can be made on baseball fields. And there was a lot of magic in those moments at WNST and on the radio. I know I must have looked up. From the terror of the tower. I was on the radio when the towers fell, and I spent the first 3.5 hours of it talking to people about the pain that they felt and anger, sadness. That's a day that I will never forget. When we had the earthquake in Baltimore, I was at the station and everybody thought a truck was coming down Hart Road. Like, why is there an 18-wheeler coming down Hart Road? You know, and driving down Hart Road and having neighbors when I pause for a chipmunk come out and say, "Hey, I like your band. I hear you every week." You know, that kind of stuff. Those are moments that live for me and make me smile on a fairly regular basis.
All I thought I did was entertain you. So it's nice to know that I've been a little bit more than that. So I've been entertaining, if nothing else.
There was plenty of that as well. No question.
Alan, appreciate you, my brother. Keep doing what you're doing down at Kennedy, and we'll catch up and we'll get some eggs without cheese or pizza without cheese or cheeseburgers without cheese or brie without cheese with you at some point. Alan famously hates cheese, which it's amazing we're still friends. Alan McCallum, 26 years in, me 30 years in. Come on out to Costas and enjoy. I'm at the Beaumont this week. I'm at Costas. We're celebrating the holidays. We have lots of stuff going on. Luke's out in Owings Mills doing it all. It's all brought to you by Royal Farms. Real fresh, real fast. Big appreciation for all of our sponsors. The Maryland Crab Cake Tour is brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. We're going to let ourselves play. I was masked up with Brandon Scott before I lost the Mervo Dundalk bet with him last week, but I will be unmasked like Kiss at Costas on Wednesday the 15th. Come on by, say hello from 2 until 5, and celebrate 30 years of the tree falling in the woods. I am Nestor. We are WNST, failing forward all of these years later. I'm trying to think of the exact quote. I don't know. I'll read it and come back. I'll share it on the internet. Right after we continue, Baltimore Positive, still in business all these years later.